You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM.
Welcome to Bridging the Gap. I'm your host, Marianne Rose. You are about to embark on a relevant and timely journey of thought with registered psychologist, Dr. Cyrus Dirksen. Thank you for tuning in and expect to be enlightened right now. Hey there, Cyrus.
Hey, Marianne.
It's always good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I'm so thankful for our show, Bridging the Gap. Yeah. What are we bridging today?
Always trying to make things meet, come together.
Yeah. And opposites is often what I think about. Like, what is a different way of looking at something? Often helpful if you can think of it in the sometimes extreme opposite, polar opposite. Mm-hmm. And even just to bring your mind to those different places can help bridge gaps of all kinds of things. And we always need to be doing that. I think a lot of people find their life more balanced. They're watching the news and they're even able to consider conflict with what the two different sides are saying, perhaps with no judgment.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, to actually be able to process it, right? And actually be able to hear it.
You know, we've always looked to soften hearts, perhaps. Bring people to a place of mercy for what would cause them angst and upset and anger and aggravation. We want to calm things down for people.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so often there's so much unnecessary damage and brokenness out there because of these conflicts that, if managed just slightly differently, would melt away, not be a problem.
Yes. One of the places you can manage conflict, we often talk about this, is within yourself. Knowing how to look at certain things that you deal with. A big part of it I'm learning recently is the body. The body is responsible for some of these things, like the chemistry in the body. If you're not feeding it right, if you're not understanding the link more and more between mind-body, wow.
I know when we're walking through the world, it feels so much like it's our thinking and our logic and our perception of the world that's caused by the world or by our own decisions. And it's amazing how much of our reality, of our decisions and our perceptions are affected by things that just are in ourselves, you know, that are not logic-based or not rational. They're just based in things like our blood chemistry, you know, and our emotions. It's so surprising to see the research on that. And it just drives right against our own feelings about how the world works and how we operate.
I like that you use the word logic, like illogical. Does that mean unacceptable? I don't think so. And I think that's one of the gaps to bridge is that just because your body is behaving in a way that feels like conflict, actually our topic today is slow down. You move too fast.
You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy. La-da-da-da-da-da-da, feeling groovy. Hello, lamppost, what you knowin'? I come to watch your flowers growin'. Ain't you got no rhymes for me? Do it and do-do, feeling groovy. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da, feeling groovy. I got no deeds to do, no promises to keep. I'm dappled and drowsy and ready to sleep. Let the morning time drop all its petals on me. Life, I love you, all is groovy.
Mm-hmm. actually, our topic today is slow down. You move too fast. That's a line in a song, but it's a reality. And so perhaps this fast paced feeling creates so many opposite encounters you're experiencing within your body. Just because you're moving so fast, you're anxious is one of them for sure.
Yeah, anxiety can cause speed. There is a time for speed. You know, if you think about the gazelle on the prairie and the savannah, you know, running from the tiger or something like that, it's like, yeah, run faster. You know, like there's a biological place for panic and speed and all of those kinds of things. Honestly, now it's pretty rare that it's helpful. And yet it's a primary response that we have to so many situations is to kind of move more quickly. And it's so rare that it's actually beneficial and helpful. And again, the huge paradox here is that it feels helpful. And so we don't even really identify it as a problem most of the time. We actually identify it as a solution. When things that feel like solutions are problems, that's a place where often people need help. Because it's like, well, I'll do more of the thing that's hurting me. And it's like, ooh, and speed is one of them. Just going faster often makes things worse.
Yes. To get it done, to always feel like you want to see the end. And the feeling of completion, because the feeling of satisfaction when you reach that means that you want it more. And so the drive is speed. But what's the cost of speed in different areas? Of course, there's deadlines and important things like that. And we've talked about the business end of things, like the corporate world speed, deadlines, cost of people. We've had those conversations.
Yeah, I mean, there are deadlines. There's realities around those kinds of things. And if you measure productivity, if you measure our ability to do things, adrenaline and pressure does in some kind of fundamental way affect our productivity. Like, it can help us to get something done. Sometimes people procrastinate and they can't get something done, and then with enough pressure they can get that done, and it's like, yeah, there's a truth there. Without the pressure they didn't get it done. Without the panic, this anxiety and trying to do it quickly at the end, you know, the all-nighter or something like that, it's like, well, Cyrus, without that pressure, without the anxiety, without the speed, it wouldn't have gotten done. It's like, okay, I get it. However, if you measure somebody who has anxiety in their work, it's almost always, there's a few rare instances where anxiety creates increased productivity, but if you measure anxiety when people are engaged, it almost invariably decreases value and productivity in what they're doing.
Yeah.
Even though it feels to the person like they're getting more done, it's almost always worse.
Isn't that interesting?
And of course, that relationship just increases with any kind of complexity. If you're dealing with a more complex task, the damage that anxiety will cause increases with complexity, and particularly with creativity. If any creativity is required, then anxiety is basically death for creativity. And so that just makes it worse. The only time really that you can kind of see this where it's actually positive is extremely simple tasks that you know extremely well. You will then get a boost of productivity with potential anxiety. And even that is short-lived. If you're talking about a critical task that's simple, that you know extremely well, and is time-limited, maybe then. Maybe then.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like the Olympics. It's like, I'm going to lift a big weight. Okay, let's increase your stress. You know it super well. But it's very specific.
And those are language-based things, too, like stress, anxiety, creating the need for speed. But the task is important. You've developed a habit around it. And so it's something you're already extremely skilled in doing. Then those words maybe don't work. Like, I've even heard a different way of looking at stress anyway, that it can be an empowering kind of word. Because I think we perhaps attach fear, trouble, wrong, in the way of what those words mean. But if it's a doctor performing a surgery and they only have this much time because of the absolute horror, the things that could happen if they don't do it right.
It could potentially be beneficial, but even times when you take somebody who's all those things, who's very skilled, like that doctor example, typically when a doctor who knows their task, or when an Olympian who knows their task, they often don't experience anxiety as you would think of it. they'll experience an increased pressure and flow would be probably a better description of it. An engagement with the task in an attentive, focused manner, not necessarily a jittery nervousness. And that is actually what increases their productivity. I mean, if you compare somebody who's not doing a task with somebody who's doing it fast, yeah, fast wins. But if you compare somebody who's attentive and engaged in a task with any kind of flow compared to somebody who has an anxious engagement, the person who's just attentive and engaged is going to win almost every time.
Yeah. There's a calm involved because there's a knowing and there's a letting go of the kind of fear that's keeping that in like a trap.
Right.
So I know anxiety, and yes, let's use it for what it's commonly used for. It isn't the pressure of engagement and flow, which is beautiful. That's the way we should reframe it, because if we can do that, then we can teach our own bodies.
Right. What we're actually looking for, right? Not panic. We're looking for engagement, flow, concentration, attention. And sometimes that can be difficult to achieve, which I understand. And that's a different question. How do you get yourself into that state without causing... Sometimes the only way people can get themselves engaged is panic, and maybe then panic helps. But hopefully we can get ourselves there some other way.
Yes. I like the idea of building up the skill of that creativity, the flow, as you're slowing down. So do everything first in slow motion. Develop its own habit slowly. I would imagine that that's one of the ways, because you're asking about like what are some of the methods. And actually I was thinking about a funny example that came to my mind was driving. So while people are in a really big hurry, and there's another person that's just going about it in the regular pace of traffic, and the person's weaving in and out of traffic, and then 5 miles down the road, you're right beside each other.
Yes.
At the light.
I remember that. I've been on both sides of that.
Yes,
you
me
know,
too.
It's fascinating to see the futility of the panic, right?
Yeah.
You know, what did that achieve you? Maybe just increased chance of death, really. You know, it's like, that's all.
And anxiety, and it brought you to all these levels of discomfort and anger. And then you brought that into the rest of your day. So, like, thinking about doing things slowly, you have to on purpose pull back. You might have the need for speed. And you might really feel this wonderful rush of adrenaline. It is fun. I like to be a little bit sporty behind the wheel at times. I'd love to own a real great sports car. If you really want to know, like, would that ever be lovely? Would I obey the law? That's tricky.
Oh, dear.
God help. I think he would.
Yes. But it's exciting, right? It can be fun, you know, to kind of have an adrenaline experience, right? That's...
Can you do it calmly? Can you do it gently? Can you do it without, like, having the experience of hate upon yourself or upon the person you're around? That's a definition of anxiety, because it usually causes those feelings towards yourself or towards somebody else.
It's so true, you know, that frustration and anger. Anxiety and anger are so linked. We don't think about them as being linked, but they are. And it's very easy to imagine. All you have to do is imagine somebody who's terrified of an elevator and then try pulling on them into an elevator. You're going to imagine an angry response pretty quickly, maybe impending violence potentially as this person tries to not go into the elevator, which typically doesn't happen in adulthood. You know, we don't pull adults into elevators, but we do pull children into elevators, which is why anxiety and anger is so much more linked with children. It's just because they don't have control over their lives like an adult does. And so we have to look for more subtle times when anger and anxiety are linked for adults. But they definitely are. So that frustration.
Yes.
Can we do it without that frustration and anger? It's real.
Well, the key word you just used is control. Without that control, they don't have control. And that's the feeling that drives the speed sometimes, is the feeling of not being in control. What if you did? What if the control was there? And all you needed to do was tap into it, like a little trust fall, mini trust fall. This is what I'm picturing within your own gut. So you are moving forward in something. I'm going to give a really benign example.
Sure.
You're grabbing the toothpaste, you're brushing your teeth, you're turning on the water, you knocked something over while you were turning on the water, you turned it on too hot and you burnt your hand in the middle and different kinds of things were happening and you got super frustrated and the toothpaste all of a sudden just fell onto the floor instead of onto your toothbrush, and you're having this experience because something is driving the inner working. And so if you're experiencing all of those things, But like the cars in traffic, the one that's slower and just kind of not freaking out is still getting there at the same time.
Yes.
It's like a mental shift, a body shift that you can make. Like I used trust fall, but within your gut.
Yeah.
To be like, okay, I'm just going to do this more slowly.
Yeah.
Slow motion everything.
Yes.
Even the simplest and most benign things creates a, well, you now have brought the control up.
Yeah, and you have this increased efficiency as you kind of slow things down. It's so paradoxical. And I mean, we're just talking about on an individual basis, you know, like dealing with your own car, dealing with your own toothpaste. How do you live your life and engage in productivity? And you can see this profound link between anxiety and rushing and decreases of efficiency and productivity and value. All these things happen. But that multiplies, that relationship multiplies when you put it in the context of relationships. So if you're actually needing to engage in any kind of teamwork or relational task or marriage or something like that, and then you introduce, you know, anxiety and rushing and panic, whatever negative effect it has on a person when they're trying to be productive and they're experiencing that stress, you just multiply that when you try to do that in the context of any kind of team, because it causes increased misunderstandings as people process things at different rates and make decisions in different paces. And then again, you multiply it again. If there's any kind of complexity or creativity or risk, going fast, rushing, anxiety, all just blows up teams, blows up relationships even more. So everything we've talked about, and now amplify it for relationships.
Amplified in a room with somebody who has that kind of energy. And you've just been training your body and mind to take it easy. Are you just going to sit there with your arms folded across your chest, observing with silent judgment while you are just gleefully calm? Perhaps. Perhaps you would. So your gleeful, calm self in the midst of energy like that. And you're not the one who's bringing the energy. Would you be able to emit what you have and share without being arrogant? Without being interruptive? What is that in a room?
It's an interesting and problematic dynamic. I mean, what often happens is people are going quickly, right? So we have this speed. They're going too fast, maybe for themselves. You know, we've just talked about internal productivity and efficiency just alone. So they're going maybe too fast for that. But then what happens in a group is you've processed things yourself because you've been thinking about it. It was important to you. It was your perspective. You've processed it and you present it usually in an abbreviated, unclear way, particularly if you're going fast. And you give the other people a fraction of the time to process what you've maybe spent, let's say, an hour processing, or more likely a week processing. You present it in this unclear, truncated, abbreviated way because you're going fast, and everybody else has maybe like 3 seconds to process it compared to the week that you had. And then you're all of a sudden frustrated that they're taking too long or didn't come to the same conclusion that you did, you know, in their brief, just episodic reaction reflex, you know. And so this is where teamwork breaks down, because that time is now like, if I need it to go slower, okay, that's fine. And in a group, we need to go even slower because we need to allow time for everybody else to catch up, maybe clarify it a couple times. And then once it's clear, then time to process it and actually think it through. And so what you have to do in a team is you have to have this radical trust that more heads are better than one, and that it's worth the extra time in order to allow people to catch up with the perspective that you have, then this radical trust that more heads are better than one, that they might actually have a response once they've had time to actually process that may actually be helpful, probably not perfect in its own right, but helpful towards a group process, and that then you have to think about it. So everything is multiplied in time. You have to have this radical trust that the final product will be better because you've involved more people, which is tough. It's tough to believe that other people and their input will actually be beneficial. Typically, we feel right already. I feel like I'm coming with the right answer. And so to believe that more heads are better than one is tough. Now, we have examples where this is true, where we can see that more heads are better than one. So just to take a simple example of jelly beans in a jar, and you had everybody take a guess at how many jelly beans there are, almost always the average of everybody's guesses will be more accurate than any single guess. And so you have this reality where it's like, if we can communicate and combine our knowledge like an average equation, where we're taking all these numbers that everybody's throwing out, and then the equation of an average just adds all of that knowledge together very quickly and easily, you get this best answer, best guess. So it's wonderful with jelly beans because it's so simple. But with other things, it's like, oh, how do we actually connect our brains around things that are so much more complex than getting the right number for a number of jelly beans? And we don't have an average equation to just kind of take all of our responses and put them together. Yeah. It's so much harder to link all of our brains together. So that takes time. You have to have that trust that these brains will actually slowly communicate through our words and be able to come to a better answer.
Yeah. That's beautiful and optimal.
Mm-hmm.
And also very unrealistic in a lot of different places. You have to have a synergy with a team, people who have that trust already in a way that's built up, to be able to create that within an environment of more people, the more people, you need to be able to have them on the same page as much as possible. And why I said it's somewhat unrealistic is because there's going to be so many in the equation, the team, perhaps, that they're just going to see frustration.
Mm.
Or there's going to be the one who's making the decisions at the end of it all, who's just going with their mostly favorite thought instead of the team building experience of it all. So they're just running away from what's been built there. So even in that, what was expressed with perhaps the best solution or the truth or something that at least came from a place of calm, you need to have patience through your own journey.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you, let's say you were in all these great places, but that wasn't happening within the dynamics, and that you needed to, go for this and now correct this type of communication error or things that are going on within a team and different people and the way they think.
Mm-hmm.
So gathering people together and getting them on the same page.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, that's how a lot of things do get to a place of success.
Yes.
But then along the way, a lot of people like drop off.
Right.
Or just live with offense the whole time.
Yes. True consensus. Can you reach it, right? Like, can you actually get to it? And oftentimes, consensus is a false consensus. It's like, it's not real. But the hope would be that, you know, you can get there. And I think what you're talking about is this kind of interesting interplay between including a group and then having executive control. Like, how do you balance those things, right? Because things will go kind of sideways sometimes. If everybody has exactly the same amount of input, you can get to really weird answers at times. And this has been a struggle for human history, is like, how do you set up a government? Like, how do you actually make a decision that represents the best of humankind and the best of bringing brains together? Because consensus, true consensus, when you're like, no, we will not go forward unless we all agree, can lead to really weird group dynamics where actually one person is controlling many by just not agreeing. And they have actually absolute control because you've given every single person this kind of veto power. And so it just gets more complex sometimes to actually get it. But it's so valuable because we know that more brains are better than one. So how do you do this well? How do you actually link brains together to create teamwork and see blind spots and to do all these things? To do it well is actually quite challenging. And I mean, on the theme of today, it's almost always slower.
Yeah, like that's exactly it.
And then the details get kind of foggy on how to do it, you know, really well. But almost always slower.
That's the world. I'm glad you brought in politics and the whole world and the global leaders and how they're functioning together. And if we can gather so many of them together and they can all be in a group and have big conversations about major things, you're still not going to land in some of the same decisions. Maybe there's going to be voting that's involved, and then some people are going to walk away with not getting their way.
Right.
And that's got to be part of the process. Perhaps the ones that are not getting their way in the big, big picture of whatever it is, if that's happening to somebody, but there's justice and morality and kindness and gentleness and health, don't give up.
Right.
Because the leader of such and such chose something opposite of mm-hmm. some of those things because they still exist in you.
Right.
And so I think even that would be the goal for yourself, bringing it back to your own body and your own dealing with needing to slow down is to not give up when your own, I'm going to use the word betrayal, when your own body betrays you, when you had the toothpaste spill and the different kinds of, and of course it can be bigger and more serious things too, but those moments when they happen, what's going on that's deeper? And how are you learning to slow down?
Well, that was an honor to get to spend that time with you. Appreciate you tuning in. Please check out more of Dr. Cyrus at maplecrestchurch.ca and at drcyrusdirksen.com. Thanks again, and tune in next time for Bridging the Gap. I'm Marianne Rose.
Winnipeg and world, you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM.